inside the KXSE studios for the second edition of the No Huddle Offense, a KXSE Daily Trojan podcast every week leading you up into the pregame show for the USC football season 2011. And I'm joined once again, Trevor Wong, co-sports editor with Joey Kaufman. You can read their columns, The 19th Hole with Joey on Mondays, and of course, Trevor in the Zone on Fridays. Guys, how are we doing?
Doing pretty well. Stoked for the encore.
Pretty good, Dave.
Pretty good. I like the energy already. They always told me if some is good, more is better. That was obviously my mindset at the Coliseum hot dog line on Saturday. We're going to continue it on the momentum here with this podcast. First off, 19-17, USC, a victor in the home opener. It wasn't pretty, but they got the job done. What's your first impression of this USC football team?
First impression, A, Robert Woods is really good. B, Robert Woods is really good. C, Robert Woods is really good. Barkley to Woods certainly looked good on Saturday. I think that's pretty self-evident. Barkley, obviously, 34 completions. Robert Woods, 17 receptions. So they get that part down, but other than that, seem to be quite a few holes.
Can I get a D, all the above? Robert Woods is really good.
I mean, it's crazy because you look at the season he had last year. It was a surprise. He came on. But as things wore on, you realize he was the best receiver on that team. What surprised me most about Robert Woods' performance, obviously the 17 catches, he was targeted numerous times. He was single-covered mostly the entire game until the fourth quarter, and they jammed him a little bit on the line. Were you surprised at the way Minnesota played him, seeing that after the first drive, he had three catches, a touchdown? I mean, it just seemed from then on, Minnesota was okay with the fact of him catching the ball and making plays.
I feel like Minnesota tried to play sort of a soft coverage. They would keep everything in front of him. I think they were just trying to prevent a big play with Woods. So I guess maybe they should have doubled him. Maybe they should have jammed him more at the line. But I guess that was their strategy, prevent the big play, which by and large they did. Because even though Woods had 17 receptions, outside of that 43-yard touchdown, a lot of them were for short yardage. He didn't necessarily have a ton of receiving yards. So I guess it was a strategy, and they held him to 19 points. So it wasn't necessarily the worst.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised. I mean, you get a guy that catches 17 receptions, and how many times do they run screen passes for him? You figured Minnesota would get the idea. But, yes, they did limit the big play, and I guess that's what matters.
Jeremy Bates must have loved the play call in that game. I think out of Woods' 17 receptions, 15 were for bubble screens. So somewhere Jeremy Bates was smiling yesterday.
I think it probably says something about the inconsistencies along the offensive line, a young offensive line, four guys starting a new position. But with that said, before we go on to Utah, we're going to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly from USC's 19-17 victory over Minnesota. Get the idea there. The good, the bad, and the ugly. The good, we just talked about a little bit about it. Matt Barkley, Robert Woods connecting 17 times, a school record, surpassing Johnny Morton's 15. This connection, is there a better one right now in college football?
If they introduced the Pony Express Award this year, which goes to the best tandem in college football, Matt Barkley and Robert Woods seem to be the leading candidate thus far for that award, in my opinion. So I would say no. No, Dave.
I'd say me and Joey Kaufman give him a run.
Other than that, you guys are pretty good.
Yeah, I don't know. Barkley and Woods, probably the best out there right now at this point.
I mean, it's interesting because these guys have played 14 games together. And you look at what they've done on paper, and it's astounding. I mean, you have a junior and a sophomore, didn't know each other. You know, they never played against each other, anything like that. And they just connect in a way that's just very rare. And you even see the relationship off the field getting closer with each surpassing day. It's unbelievable to me. The other thing to take a note from Saturday, Matt Barkley didn't throw an interception. I know, as you said, Jeremy Bates would have been proud of a lot of bubble screens. We talked about it coming in, no interceptions, and obviously he only had, I think it was four in the first 7 weeks. So obviously last year was similar results. But were you surprised Matt Barkley didn't try to force too much in this game?
No, I think the game plan was tailored for Barkley not to throw anything. He had obviously zero interceptions. I think by and large they tried to keep Barkley going a lot of three-step drops, get the ball out quickly. Get it to Woods in space, so there weren't a lot of chances for him to throw interceptions. I think they try to limit turnovers by and large, so I guess it's just the way the play calling went, that doesn't necessarily surprise me.
Yeah, touching on what Joy said, I think it was pretty conservative play calling. They didn't take too many chances downfield, and when they did, it was Woods catching the ball.
All right, and the other good that kind of gets overlooked, Kyle Negrete, the walk-on, his first game, four kicks inside the 20-yard line. Obviously, that last one, some people wanted them to go for the 49-yard field goal with freshman kicker Andre Hadari. They didn't. They kicked it. He downs it at the 9-yard line. They eventually get the Torin Harris interception. What did you make of McGrady? Obviously, college football, as is the case in the NFL, at times can be a possession game. In this case, USC did a good job using McGrady's leg to put Minnesota in a bad situation four separate times. McGrady's leg, were you impressed?
I think, by and large, USC's specials the past couple of years have been kind of lacking, particularly since last 2 years. So I think just anytime USC can get a good punter, it's got to be helpful. I mean, it's kind of weird. They got Alvarado on the scholarship, and now they went with the walk-on, so I find that almost a little concerning in that regard. But I think it was nice to see McGrady play that well.
I was pretty impressed, but I think more importantly, it didn't put our defense in it took a lot of pressure off the defense, not giving Minnesota a good field position.
Let's get to the bad. The offense scores 19 points in the first half. They scored none in the second half, and let's be honest, there's not a bunch of world beaters on Minnesota's defense. Nonetheless, they hold the Trojans scoreless in the second half. The other bad, running back tandem, DJ Morgan, Curtis McNeil. McNeil hasn't played since 2009. DJ Morgan making his USC debut. They have just 103 yards on 24 carries. They weren't really a focal point. Obviously, 35% of the offense was running, 65 passing. What did you make of the running game on Saturday?
I might disagree with you a little bit on the running game because, granted, they only had just over 100 yards combined, but McNeil had just about six carries. They still averaged nearly 4.5 yards a carry, so I think that might have been a product of just they didn't commit to the running game well enough as they could have. Young offensive line, you had four night guys playing new positions on the line if you count Collard moving from right guard to center. So I think when you look at that and the big picture of things, I think the running game, I think you're being a little harsh, Dave. I think bad might be a little harsh.
DJ Morgan said after the game that the return of Mark Tyler would be a big thing for this running back core. They didn't have him in short yardage situations when they could have used him on that 4th-and-1 or 3rd-and-2. What do you think Mark Tyler adds to this team that they didn't have in week one?
They need a bigger back. I think what you touched on is the short yardage situations or even like a goal line back. I remember one play, Curtis McNeil was lined up in the backfield on 3rd-and-2, and I was scratching my head. I had no idea what was going on. But in that particular situation, Mark Tyler, we need a bigger back. And with DJ Morgan, McNeil, Baxter, pretty much all the same size, I think that's where Tyler comes in handy.
Although in defense of the guys SC does have right now, when you look at Morgan, you look at McNeil, they do run hard. So they're not necessarily the soft backs like you would see in the Joe McKnight. They would kind of dance around. I mean, in fairness to McNeil and Morgan, I think they do run hard. But just touching on Trevor's point, Tyler's pushing 240 pounds. Most of these guys are hovering around 200, so you're talking about 40 pounds there. And I think they probably could use 40 pounds in that backfield.
Let's hopefully, Joey, you don't think this is too harsh. Let's get to the ugly. 0-2 on fourth down, including Colin Holmes' 36-yard snap backwards that set up Minnesota's first touchdown. And 0-2 on two-point conversions, the first two touchdown drives. They don't get that point. They only win by two. It would have been nice, I guess, to have two extra points of breathing room if they went for one instead of two. What did you make of the risky play calling, or was it risky, on the two fourth down conversions that failed in the two-point conversions?
At least we know Colin Holmes can make for a good long snapper now. But anyway, the reason I have a problem with the latter fourth down call, I think it was late in the third where they ran a pitch play, and it was about a 4th-and-1. I would have liked to see them gone for a field goal. It would have been 45 yards, obviously, a little long for Hadari. But his range is supposed to be there, and I think when you have a freshman kicker, they're playing Utah next week. Andre Hadari's never kicked a field goal in a college football game. The game against Minnesota was late, or it was close late. SC's playing Utah next week. I think you want to give a kid like that a chance to get some experience in the game, and I think that cost him. He only kicked one extra point. I think you need to give him a chance to kick.
Yeah, I totally agree with Joey. You got to give your kicker a chance. Otherwise, you don't know how he's going to perform in those types of situations. Just going for it on fourth down every single time, I don't know if that shows on the coaching staff whether you have trust in him or not, or is just Kiffin being really aggressive.
Well, I think here's the thing. Next week, your SC's playing Utah. It's tied 27-21 in the fourth quarter, 1:30 left, and they line Hadari up for a 38-yard field goal. He's never kicked a field goal in a game. Even if he misses that 45-yarder, I think it helps you in the long run as opposed to just going with a run play, which, by the way, the run play, a pitch play on a 4th-and-1, I don't know why you're doing that.
And it's funny because in the offseason, there was an ESPN article featuring Matt Barkley in the QB sneak. You thought if they're going to either run it up the middle to Morgan, a bigger back, or if they were going to just run it with Barkley with a QB sneak on 4th-and-1. Going with the pitch play, I didn't get that. The other
why don't even shovel it to Red Elson, your new fullback.
Well, that didn't work on the two-point conversion.
He's a bigger guy, too.
The 8 drops, though, the other ugly. And Mike Barkley was 34 of 45, easily could have been 40, 41 of 45. Obviously, Randall Telfair, Xavier Grimble, new to the offense. It was their first game, a lot of jitters. What did you make of the 8 drops by USC's wide receivers and tight ends?
wouldn't fret over it too much. As you point out, Randall Telfer and Xavier Grimble, first-time starters, play Minnesota Week 1 Coliseum. Big crowd. There'd be jitters.
Big
that
crowd?
Happens.
Was it a big crowd?
Let's just go big crowds compared to their high schools. Let's go with that.
I don't think you can make too much a big deal out of it. Like Barkley said in the press game interview, he said something you can't worry about, especially you're going to need somebody outside of Woods to produce, so you're going to have to start looking to other guys to catch those balls and have the confidence in them.
Let's get to real or not real. Lane Kiffin was asked afterwards if the way they played in Week 1, if they translated that to Week 2, could they beat Utah? He said no. Real or not real, USC, the way they played in Week 1, could beat Utah.
I'm going to say no. They need to find somebody outside of Woods to be an offensive threat. I mean, the defense played really well, but I think offensively we stalled in the second half. There wasn't much continuity, so we're going to have to figure out a way to get more rhythm on the offense side of the ball.
St. Lane Kiffin is wrong. It is real. They can beat Utah. Utah beat Montana State, a football championship subdivision school, by 17 points in their season opener. Utah right now is not world beaters. They're breaking in Norm Chow's new system. Jordan Wynn looked like he had a little bit of struggles against it. USC opened as a 6.5 favorite. Moved up to 10. Like I see.
Okay.
Not against the spread necessarily, but I think
I feel like the two of you moved by Vegas a little bit too much, but okay. Lane Kiffin tones down the playbook when it comes to going for high-risk, high-reward plays against the Utes. Real or not real?
I say he plays conservative again. I don't see him taking a lot of chances. He might take some chances with Barkley, but I think in terms of the running game, I think we'll probably see much of the same thing.
I think he opens it up a little bit. I think one of the reasons he was conservative on Saturday was not just for the fact that they had a young offensive line, young running back core, but I think they wanted to keep the playbook a little smaller, not really show their hand with Utah coming up, which I think was another consideration. So I think with Utah coming in, a game that will likely decide the Pac-12 South Division already, even though it's just the second week, but Utah, one of the favorites to win that division, I think Lane opens up the playbook a little more. Particularly maybe with Dylan Baxter and some Wildcat sets that they didn't really use Week 1.
And that leads me to my next question. The first time we've heard Dylan Baxter, we're 12 minutes into this podcast. He had a strong camp, probably looked at the strongest runners in the first three scrimmages, yet he only gets two plays in that game, only got one touch, and that would be the three-yard screenplay in the fourth quarter. Dylan Baxter will get more than one touch against Utah.
In fact, he will get more than one touch. I think Lane did say after the game that he had some sets for Baxter lined up. They incorporated a lot of Baxter formations in the playbook. They just didn't run those formations. So for Baxter not to take it personally necessarily, but I think they need to use Baxter. I think he's Morgan and McNeil are very similar. And I think having Baxter in there complements those guys well, especially if you're not going to give Tyler a lot of touches. Baxter, you can use him in the Wildcat. You can put him out wide. A little bit of a bigger runner than former.
Knowing Dylan Baxter, Trevor, is this a guy that if you don't play him, you know, give him 5-10 different, you know, looks in the game, you know, he was in for two plays. Is this a guy you can lose early in the season if he doesn't get playing time?
I think so. I think after the game he was visibly upset, if that's the word.
I don't think any of us even really saw him. He was out of there quicker than anyone. He grabbed his fat.
I was walking behind him in the tunnel and he looked visibly upset. I think, yeah, you need to get him involved in the offense. I think coming into the season, he was expected to obviously split carries. And now he only got one touch the first game. It's kind of concerning, I guess, on his part.
Do you think he gets more than two touches?
Yeah, he gets about 10.
I think it has to be a little disheartening, especially going from Baxter's perspective. You look at a kid who was a five-star recruit coming out of high school, certainly highly decorated, comes to USC as bunch of troubles early on, suspended for the Hawaii game, eventually suspended for the Oregon State game. But certainly, suffice to say, he had an up and down freshman season. And now coming into the sophomore year, had a good camp, first game, two touches. I mean, that's got to be, from his perspective, you got to feel a little bummed out. So, see what happens this week.
All right, we'll continue on. Two more, real or not real. Robert Woods, obviously, three touchdown catches on pace for 36. I'm not going to give him that many. Real or not real, Robert Woods will score 20 touchdowns this season.
I'm going to say real. Yep.
You're going to say not real. If they keep going to Woods, I feel like teams are eventually going to start doubling and triple teaming him. So we'll see. It depends. I think it depends if a second receiver emerges from that crew. Not necessarily. I think Woods has the capability of getting 20 touchdowns, but are you going to see Marquise Lee, Bryce Butler, Brandon Carswell developing into that number two spot opposite Woods? So I think that'll be what to watch for.
I think even if defenses start keying on Woods, he'll figure it out. Barkley said he's a smart, cerebral player.
He only had six last year, though. 20 would be quite the, 20 would be quite the jump.
All right, finally, Coliseum crowd for this Saturday's inaugural Pac-12 opener. It was only a shade over 68,000 against Minnesota. Real or not
That's
real,
being generous, too.
Real or not real, they get more than 68,000 in the stands this Saturday.
They get more because there are some fans coming from Salt Lake City who will make sure of that.
Yeah, I'm going to say real, too.
Okay, over-under. We're now on to over-under. They have three sacks on Saturday. Dejon Harris contributing, Chris Galipo contributing, McPerry contributing. They'll have more than 36 sacks this season, which they're on pace for at the moment. Over-under.
I'm going to say yes because I think the front seven was much improved.
Is yes an over-under?
Oh, yeah. Over 36? Yeah,
how
over 36.
How many do you think you'll get?
I'm going to say 40.
I like over by just a tad. I like 38. 38, 39, just barely.
They had 38 last year. So, I mean, they're on pace for a little less, but they don't have a pass rusher like Jarrell Casey. But you looked at it, you know, it was quiet, which was surprising to me. Devon Kennard.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Devon Kennard,
yes.
I didn't hear his name barely mentioned at all. Obviously, him, Wes Horton, they were moving around.
Okay.
If Armon Armstead could come back.
What I find odd from that game in general, only 43 players actually took snaps.
Yep.
So Kennard hardly played. Galipo took every snap, so Dawson hardly played. McDonald took every snap, which I find probably the most concerning, to be honest with you, because you have Utah coming in next week. And say Galipo goes out with a hamstring injury in the first quarter, then you have Dawson coming in against Utah who hasn't played a snap. They said they were going to rotate guys all fall camp. They said they were going to recycle guys in on the line, linebacker, because depth was a problem last year, as Lane Kiffin would be quite fond of reminding reporters. So why don't you play anybody?
It's an interesting question. Next question, 8 penalties per game over under. They had 8 for 75 yards. John Martinez, the main culprit with 2. He had a personal foul. He had a holding. It was not pretty. Over under 8 penalties per game this season.
I think in the beginning we'll see probably around that number because the offensive line is relatively new. I think as the season progresses, though, I think they'll cut down on it.
I'll take the under as well. I think a lot of those penalties were due to experience, particularly Martinez, who had the chop block, had the personal foul. So I think a little bit of frustration set him there, with especially the young unit. So I think if they give this unit a chance to gel, third, fourth, fifth, sixth game, maybe we see 5 penalties a game.
All right, USC in their first game averaged 4.3 yards per carry with Morgan and McNeil. Utah, though, coming in last season, the top team in the Mountain West Conference in total run defense. Surprising, since they played in the same conference as TCU, but they were actually better, averaging just over 3.1 per carry. Over under 4.5 yards per carry against Utah this Saturday.
I'm going over. I think Utah has been historically great against the run. It's actually one of the more overlooked things about the Utes, considering their past success over the last decade. But they lost a lot of guys in that defensive line. They used to have 8-9 guys who they would just rotate in and out. And this year, the rotation's been clipped down to about 6 or 7. So I think SC really has a chance. They commit to the run early. They have a chance. So I think they can get maybe 5 yards of carry.
I think even with Utah losing much of their defensive line, I think the O-line is still learning. And I think if Kiffin does not run the ball as much like he did in game one, then I could see probably about 3.5
I'd like to see USC open with the run a little more. That first driver, they went 66 yards. Pretty much of those 13 plays were exclusively,
I think
11 of 13. I maybe correct me on that if I'm wrong.
No,
but
it was 11 of 13.
11 of 13, I think you got to run the ball a little bit more, especially early, especially with the young offensive line. I know they want to ease pressure off the young guys, and I get that, and they have young running backs, I get that. But at the same time, I think you need to give them a chance to run gel. If it doesn't work, obviously don't keep doing it. But, I mean, especially in the first quarter, give it a shot.
Let's talk about the pass-run ratio. That is my next question. 65% of the plays on Saturday were pass plays. Over-under for the season, 65% of the plays will be passing plays the final 11 games of the season.
Unless June Jones is somehow going to migrate the Coliseum press box, start calling the plays, I think we're going to have to see an under in that regard. I think it'll probably end up being 64.
Are we changing, Trevor, from tailback you to passing you?
Oh, man, I don't know. Well, if we got Heisman Woods here, maybe.
Do you think over under 65?
I'm going to say under. There's no way you can keep up a whole season throwing 65% of the time.
Matt Colt Brennan Barkley.
All right, moving on to Utah. John White, the fourth, ran for 150 yards in their win against Montana State. Minnesota had over 150 yards rushing against USC. Obviously, they had a mobile quarterback who accounted for some of that. Over-under, John White, who is from Torrance, California, a native, the junior. He's 5'8", compared a lot to Jaquizz Rodgers, actually, from things I read. He rushes for over 100 yards this Saturday against the Trojans.
Oh, well, I think you cited Minnesota's performance against USC, the 150 rushing yards, because pretty much exclusively they ran the ball. They only had 150 passing yards roughly. So I think Minnesota seemed to rely a lot on Gray and Bennett to pound the ball. I think Utah probably runs a more 50-50 pass to run ratio, so I think it's less.
I'm going to say less too, because I think the front seven is very much improved, as we saw in game one. But seeing Minnesota, his quarterback, Marquise Gray, he cannot throw. So I don't know if the defense was just more concerned on him running and just daring him to throw, or what they were thinking. But I think Utah probably gets over.
One of the things I did find a little bit disconcerting about SC's defense is it was a very soft zone a lot of times. And Minnesota wasn't really a threat to pass, as you touched on, with Marquise Gray being a first-time starter quarterback. Yet SC would seem to sag in a soft zone. They wouldn't really get up and pressure him. And when Minnesota did decide to run the ball, they would get 3, 4, 5 yards because SC was so played back. So I'd like to see them jam the line a little bit more against Utah.
And finally, we'll get to it. The points spread, as you said, Joey, earlier moved to 10. If USC beats Utah, it will win by 10 points. Over or under 10 points, USC is to beat Utah.
I'm saying under. I think SC wins by a touchdown.
I'm going to say under. I think, yeah, there's no way SC should be favored by at least 2 touchdowns.
For Joey Kaufman and Trevor Wong, I'm Dave Dolworth. This is the KXSC Daily Trojan No Huddle Offense, and we are sending it out to the USC pregame show.